The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
Tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody? Let's go Mets, you gotta believe!
Y'all down 0-2.
You gotta believe.
Trouble, trouble. And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Hello, everybody. Insert snappy comment here.
And out doing the trick-or-treat thing with his family, and not here with us this week, is at PCN_dirt on Twitter. Make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And while you're going to websites, go to ours, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews and news, lots of news and previews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation and at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Search for the Click Nation page, and you can actually get to it at the URL, google.com/+ The Click Nation. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/TheClickNation. And in the coming days or weeks, we'll be adding the podcast to Google Play Music, since they are open to podcasts now. We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to their website, cspn.us, and make sure to shop at the CSPN store to buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise. That's redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron on your favorite social media websites to join the conversation. And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Alrighty, let's see what happened in the world of comic book, cinematic, and TV news from the past week. Straight Outta Compton writer is tapped for the Ghost in the Shell script. Let's see, Hollywood Reporter learned that Jonathan Herman, writer of the NWA biopic Straight Outta Compton, has been brought in to do an overhaul on the script for DreamWorks. John Chu wants to make a crossover film with G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Jim. Okay. So they might need to leave Jim out. It might be bad luck after it bombed at the box office last week.
Did anyone even know that it was coming out?
I didn't see a single commercial. Just because I listened to various movie podcasts, I did know.
Yeah, but I knew it was coming out. I didn't know it was coming out. I didn't know it came out then, though.
That's exactly my point. I knew that it was in the works. I knew that it was nearly time for its release. I did not know that it was going to be out this past weekend. Not that I was running to go watch it, but I was very surprised to hear that it had come out and that it had not, you know,
not
that
truly
very
outrageous.
Many people, exactly, not very outrageous, not truly outrageous. No, no, no.
Yep. There's a photo of Killer Frost from The Flash, Lisa Tease.
Yeah.
And she won't be making an appearance this season.
Oh, really?
Really?
No, at least from what I read. The picture they showed is from, like, Barry running and seeing his future or something.
The end of last season. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben Affleck confirms he's open to directing the next Batman movie.
Sure.
Affleck confirmed that while there's a lot of hoops to jump through before his role on the project could move forward, the idea of directing the next solo Batman installment was very exciting. Mark Ruffalo wants to see Bruce Banner separated from the Hulk.
Listen, it has precedent in the comics.
Might as well. They act like Bruce Banner doesn't exist in the animated world, at least.
Right.
All you see is Hulk, which I've always said, that's who everyone cares about anyway. No one cares about Banner.
Puny Banner!
But, you know, you can't just have a CGI Hulk 24/7 in the movie.
That gets expensive.
Yeah, very expensive, and plus the actor wants to act, so
right.
There's that issue. Micronauts live action movie finds a new writer.
Who knew there was a Micronauts movie?
I think it came out over New York Comic Con. It was the news that came out.
Really? I must miss that one.
Yeah. Let's see. From Puss in Boots screenwriter Tom Wheeler. And AMC is to air Preacher trailer during the Walking Dead Mega Sunday, which I'm assuming was last Sunday.
No. November 1st.
Next Sunday.
This Sunday. Yeah.
Well, this Sunday, that's right.
Okay. Oh, it says right there. Wonder Woman is actually a Batman the Superman's prequel and will include a major superhero cameo.
Okay.
Yeah. I like read some of that stuff and I'm just like, it doesn't really matter to me that much, but obviously everyone else takes it and runs with it and creates other theories and articles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles welcomes Tenet, Lawless, and more in season 4. So this is for the animated Nickelodeon show, which is in its 4th season.
Yeah, and they blew up the Earth, apparently. So go figure.
Oh, wow. Alan Tudyk on Blue Beetle Booster Gold movie. If it's working with Nathan, I'm in. That's Nathan Fillion. Colossus will have a major role in Fox's Deadpool movie. Fox's Gotham cast is Mr. Freeze. Supergirl scores highest rated new series debut of fall season. I also thought I read it in the highest of all time for a debut for a comic book show.
I don't know. Yeah, I think they said Blindspot had, well, no, they said Blindspot had the top spot before Supergirl aired, when it aired. Or...
Yeah. Is Supergirl only a half hour?
That's what I thought, too.
It's an hour.
Because I was like, wait, why is it coming on at 8:30? That seems weird.
Yeah. But they have the perfect lead-in with the Big Bang Theory.
Would you say that? Well, okay, sure, yeah. Yeah, that works. Is anybody still watching Big Bang Theory?
I think people still watch it.
That's the lead-in.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyone besides myself watch Supergirl?
Nay.
No. I did. I like that they got through the whole, here's her origin, here's her using her superpowers within the first 15 minutes before, like, the first commercial break. We had all that taken care of. Mm. So
I was going to ask you, was it just an hour? Or was it like a little extra hour and a half or something?
It was 8:30 to 9:30.
Okay, so it was just okay.
And I think it's gonna move to 8, so it's going up right against Gotham, who sent out some tweet trying to throw some shade. It's like, you do realize you're both the same
company, right?
Yeah, but I guess if they are the same company, why, you know, they're on different networks, why would they put them in competition with one another?
Website, yeah, I don't know who. Yeah, I
get what they're trying to say, but one of those DC stay losing deals.
Yes, shout out to Eclectic.
Yeah, but DC stays winning when it comes to the television shows, I'll say that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got the introduction of her powers, origins. She's already revealed her secret to two people. She had a nice throwdown fight with the villain. The special effects aren't on, like, the Flash level, at least for me. But it wasn't bad. It was a little cheesy at points. The whole, like, you know, you're a girl, you're in the way, you can't, you know, you're not your cousin. But still, overall, very enjoyable. Light, kind of lighthearted, like the Flash. So, another good addition to the comic book space on television.
Cool.
What is this?
Yeah, I can't move this.
It doesn't let us expand.
Yeah, I hate it when it does that.
Oh, well. Palm Clementif cast for Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
So, yeah, they're saying, well, I like how this article, I think it was this article, was nice about it, because if you look at her, she looks Asian. She's French, so I guess she could be mixed with Asian or something. So they're saying, well, she could be Moondragon, and then goes on to say, it was like, yeah, she could be, or she could be Mantis.
Right. That's not a bad guess.
Yeah.
Mantis. Because Mantis does play a role in the Abnett and Lanning right. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, but like, I didn't just go straight to that, because like I said, if you see it, you just kind of say, well, clearly, you know, if you know anything about the fiction.
Your voice is doing the thing again.
Oh, great.
And I see how to read the story from above that I skipped, so I'll go back and read that.
Oh, yeah.
So a few days ago, director Reed Morano and actor Olivia Wilde weighed in on a tweet urging the pair to tackle Captain Marvel. Wilde says, I'm a big fan of superhero films, and I have so much respect for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The thing with female superheroes is that in order to be powerful, they are flawless. The idea of kick-ass power lacks a certain nuance at times. There is something to be said for a female director working to create a female superhero that perhaps has a little more complexity.
Yeah. Why would they have to be flawless? That makes no sense. That's not a Marvel Universe hero.
A lot of fans end up, this has sort of like become a thing now lately. Like fans, you know, you make your characters have flaws.
Right.
Have them be relatable and not be perfect. But then when that happens to like minorities or women, everyone complains about, oh, you're making them weak and yada, yada, yada. It's like, well, yes. It's part of the story. You know, white characters have the same thing happen to them, but no one pitches a fit and complains about that when it happens. But the other groups, they're always kind of looking for excuses to complain.
Rabble, rabble, rabble.
Rabble, rabble, rabble. Yes, indeed.
Well, some of it's slightly justified in cases, though. But yeah, on the whole, it seems to be more rabble than actual.
Matthew McConaughey passed on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, apparently.
So they wanted him to play a villain in the sequel, but the actor recently passed, leaving the search for that part still in progress.
Who does he look like? Star Fox?
Star Fox?
Or Adam That's Warlock?
That's not a bad idea.
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that. But Star Fox wasn't necessarily a villain.
Right, but he would be a means to introduce Thanos.
Wasn't he a new god or something? Or
he was an
Eternal.
No, yeah, he's from Titan. Yeah, he was an Eternal. No, was he an Eternal?
Yeah, he was an Eternal from Titan.
From Titan, that's what it is.
The only reason I know that is because I read the Rage of Ultron novel that
Remender and Opinion
did, and he was in it.
Yeah, and old Avengers heads would know he was a part of the group for a while, and they even had a storyline dealing with the Eternals.
Yep.
When they were, hey, remember the Eternals?
Exactly.
So, of course, you have the rumor that Captain America Civil War trailer will debut with Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Makes sense. Synergy.
Yeah, corporate synergy. Wow, can you imagine just having another reason to go to see Star Wars? Or at least to get there early, right? Because you know everyone's going to get there early, make sure they have their seat, but you want to get there early, catch the Cap trailer.
Yep, yep.
There's a tease in this week's Flash for Wally West, for those that watched and saw. Of course, it has to do with Iris's mother and possibly, I guess, fostering a child when she was away from the family.
Yeah, who's the father? We don't know. Yada, yada, yada.
And Will Wheaton cast in Power Season 2.
Okay. I've never seen an episode of Power Season 1.
I
haven't read an issue of Powers. So there's that.
Actually, that first arc, well, from what I've read of the first arc, wasn't bad. It's been a while. I was going to read it before the show started, and I was like, well, this has nothing to do with that, so don't need to do that. Well, until next, this next season coming up, we'll kind of line up a little bit more for the first arc. But anyway, it's all right. They seem to be stepping up the budget and whatnot.
You're talking through the synthesizer again.
Oh, well, right. I don't have to worry about
it. It's not every word, but yeah.
Just pretend I'm on Transformer.
Oh, no.
What's the thing T-Pain uses?
Oh, no. No. There would be no auto-tune.
No auto-tune. Death to auto-tune.
That's all right. Let's see. In comic news, David Walker's Nighthawk hunts the streets of Chicago in a brand new series announced. There was a couple of new series announced last Friday after we recorded.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. Let's see, we have a new Punisher series, International Iron Man, Hyperion gets, I think, a limited series. Might be an ongoing, I forget.
Yeah.
Except there was another one. Maybe that was all of them.
I was very disappointed that Edmondson and Gerards are not coming back for Punisher, you know?
What are you calling us, Roddy?
Yeah, seriously, Rod.
Did you leave?
I guess. You try to get back in. Send him an invite. My phone starts to go off. I was like, wait, why wasn't he just on the screen?
Yeah, he's at the click. There he goes. You back?
Yeah, back.
Welcome back.
So you said you were disappointed about Edmondson and whatnot?
And Gerard's not coming back on Punisher. I know that Gerard's is doing his own creator-owned stuff, but it's pretty disappointing that they're not going to be continuing on in like another volume of Punisher.
And it's one of those deals where they told their story and move on for the next team to come on. Which just reminded me that there is another Black Widow series coming, and I totally forgot.
Yep.
Who's doing it?
The Daredevil team. Remember?
Oh, that's right. I was thinking that Nodo is going to at least contribute the hip-hop cover.
Apparently someone's coming back to life in Uncanny Avengers number 3.
Really?
I see. The Diamond Retailer Day at MCM London Expo, where all those new series were announced, Marvel Senior Vice President David Gabriel announced that Uncanny Avengers 2, but then Nocton says 3. Oh, 2, we'll see an apparent dead character come back to life, jokingly, possibly for the first time in comic book history, and will appear on the cover of issue 3. So it'll be spoiled before that cover comes out, I think. Okay. Skip. Boom Studio Green Lights Welcome Back as an ongoing series from writer Christopher Sibilla.
Oh, wait a second. You skipped over a quickie story about New York Comic Con where they announced, I missed this, they announced the attendance of the show topped 167,000 people for 4 days. Holy cow, it definitely felt like it.
I was going to say, each year is the most, right? So
right, and they also did expand to the notes in the article, note that Reed Pop expanded the locations to the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is a number of blocks away from the Javits Center, to have a bunch of panels, so that definitely adds space for people to attend. Mm. They had a bunch of TV panels there, like the whatchamacallit, what's the Sherlock Elementary. They had that. They had a bunch of TV show panels there, so there's definitely people going there to watch and then walking back over to the Javits. So that's a pretty cool number, and it keeps growing. It's kind of scary.
All right. So yes, back to Welcome Back. Sibilla and Clown Hotel resident. What?
Yeah, he spent a month in, it was more than a month in a clown hotel.
Oh, he's the one that just ended.
Yeah, Chris Sibilla. Yeah, I think he just, because I just saw his tweets, so I think he's gone now, or has left already.
Star Wars and Doctor Strange omnibus volumes announced.
Hang on, back up. IDW 2 published comic based on Britain's G.I. Joe, Action Man. So for anybody, any of our British listeners, there you go.
We might have some of those listeners.
Yeah.
The Mouse Guard role-playing game bot set, second edition, is out next week.
Mouse Guard!
Wonder who I put that in there for.
Mouse Guard!
Yeah, make sure to read it.
I knew that there was a Mouse Guard role-playing game, and it is extreme. It's fairly popular because I've seen it, you know, in Neutral Ground, which is like the big gaming store here in New York City. And I've seen it in comic book stores, obviously, because that's where the crossover appeal comes from. It's pretty cool. I did talk to David Peterson at New York Comic Con, and he's basically expanded his little Mouse Guard empire into role playing and all sorts of cool things. And, if anyone has not yet tried Mouse Guard, try it out. It's really, really good. You know, pick up the books, pick up, the fantasy role-playing game if you're into that. But either way, any way you enter the Mouse Guard universe is, it's going to be a good means of entry. And you're going to, read and learn about a really cool little universe.
Nice.
Boom Studios announces Mezzolith for February. Jim Lee teases new Batman Europa art. Army of Darkness takes over Humble Bundle.
A Tintin page of original art, I guess, sells for over $1.7 million at auction, breaking a world record. Wow. That is a world record price for such a double page spread of comic book artwork. This was a Sotheby's auction of comic book artwork, and it was a double page from Tintin and the Scepter of Otokar.
I don't know if y'all heard any of that background noise on my end, but I apologize.
That's all right. Not a problem. So let's see. What else do we have here?
I think we near the end, right?
Yep.
All right.
What, the Columbine?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where'd that go? It's Aquaman announces more news on a AMA, Ask Me Anything, Reddit thingamabob. So basically he said how fans weren't crazy about his Aquaman run, and he admitted maybe his take wasn't the best for the book, so he said the best thing to do would be to step away. He said he has a whole tweeted about it also, I guess, after the AMA, which that's where I saw it first originally, and he was saying how he was going to quit before his first issue came out, but his editor talked him into staying just because, I guess, how vocal the Aquaman fans were for not being crazy. Yeah, not being crazy about his take on the Atlantean King. But he's going to finish his original story, which will run up to 48, issue 48. Wow. That's going to be kind of odd, like, finish that and then two issues, and then it's that big issue 50. that'll be hopefully, I guess, maybe another the full-time writer will be on, or
yeah, like a good jumping on point.
Or they just do, hey, let's get some side stories in here for the 50 for, you know.
However they decide to do it.
Yeah. Has any one of us was reading Aquaman?
I have.
For a while.
And got to issue 45 here to read at some point this week or next week, probably next week by the time I get to it. I was actually kind of enjoying, I mean, it wasn't like one of the first things on my read pile, but I mean, it was kind of fine. I figured this was kind of the direction that they were thinking of taking the movie, Aquaman, so that's why it kind of fit to me.
Stuck with it.
Yeah. But anyway, time for to read an ad, which I forgot to do earlier, so I'll do another one before the show ends. Mm-hmm. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now for the listeners of Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
Ooh. Hey, before we get into books, I got, what, you going to say something, 870?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say, before we get into books real quick, it's show and tell time, folks.
Show and tell, then.
Yeah. First off the bat, we have, well, these two real quick, I guess. I picked up Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 trade. This is the original recipe Guardians.
Nice.
Back in the 90s.
Extra crispy.
Yes.
Valentino.
Yes, sir. Filled with all the good stuff you would expect that run to have. So that's going to get a good pouring into. Also, this is from last week, but my store finally got it. This weapon of a book is the He-Man mini comic collection.
Holy cow!
Yeah, this is a not small book.
Holy cow!
So
you thought I was bludgeoning people with the Art of the Mouse Guard book?
Yeah, so that's going to be something that's going to get a
perusal. That was something you put in the trunk of the car and said, thank God I don't have to put that in a backpack and walk home.
Well, hey, you, thunk.
Yeah. You know?
So that's going to be that. But the real deal...
I was about to say, Roddy, pardon me. I was thinking of Rakim's line from Paid in Full. I used to roll up. This is a hold up. Stop smiling. I'm going to knock you out with this book.
And I'm not moved but the money.
With the money.
Right.
Shout out to Rakim.
Yeah, really.
The goddamn seat.
All right. So, it is that time again, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, shout out to Matt Wang, who says he's on his way to listening.
All right.
It is that time again. We have a box.
Oh, collector's nice. Core.
Yep. Theme this month, villains. So I think I saw a little something of what it was going to be in here a while ago.
So
but,
is this an unopening?
Yes, this is an opening. This is an unboxing.
Unboxing, unopening? Yeah. I'm totally out of it.
Everything back in the box. There we go.
Caffeine, right, exactly. it's an unboxing.
It's all good. So first we have, let's see.
Saved on YouTube for posterity.
Yeah, really. We have the line art here.
Wow, that's a McFarlane Spidey. It's a McFarlane Venom that they're pulling. Look at that. And Loki.
And on the... Yep. And I think there's a little bit more that goes into the box, but we have a patch and a pin,
okay.
Which is, I don't know what this pin... Oh, it's Green Goblin on the Collector's Core pin, and it's Red Skull on the patch. If you can see that.
Yep. Nice.
Like it's in the way, that's why I'm... on that. Also, we have, let's skip that for a second, but we have what's like Invincible Iron Man number 1 variant.
Sweet.
Nice.
Is that? We also have, okay, we have this nice little Venom bobblehead.
Wow, the keychain one?
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. I've never seen that one. I've seen lots of Deadpools, lots of Spideys. Never seen that little Venom. That's got to be an exclusive. That's cool.
Yep. And I think that it'll probably be just like the rest of the stuff. It'll come out at some point. And we also have, from the Dorbs line, a little Loki.
Oh, nice. Aww. That's cool. That is cool.
Yeah. So, and I, again, also assume, because I've seen some of these before, but eh.
I have a Cap. I have the Cap one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I do. Hold on. Here's the Dorbs Cap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Yep.
And
I love it when it's show and tell on the Comic Book Chronicles.
I have nothing to show.
Oh, Tim, you got to go to the store or order order a box like Roddy Cat.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, I can't. I need to save that 30 whatever it is a month.
Bills to pay. Bills to pay.
True. And I still have
that Star Wars one.
What's in the box? Oh, so here we have Morbius.
Wow, that's cool. So, that is pretty awesome.
Yeah, hadn't seen this dude in a minute. So apparently there are two. There's Morbius and there's a zombie Morbius. Because you know it is Halloween also, by the way, or Halloween time.
So vampire. Well, actually, he's technically not real. He's not a real vampire. Vampire becoming a zombie. That's interesting.
Right. And last but not least, we have the prerequisite t-shirt, which is a nice gray jobby, which I'm loving.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Oh, a t-shirt.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
It always comes with a t-shirt of some kind. So.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
You do get your money's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah. They claim $50 worth of stuff, and it's $25. So, or actually, wait, they may claim more than that. I can't remember. But
yeah, because the Dorbs, I was about to say Dorbs and the Funko Pop by itself is already $20-something dollars.
Pretty much.
You know, because I was about to say the one non-comic book item I picked up at the shop this week was a Pop Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah, I got that one. That's in order of what I said.
Yep. This I picked up, and this is my one thing that I could put on show and tell this week.
And
well, other than the hip-hop covers we're about to get to.
Right. Well, we can go ahead and get into that now. Collectorscore.com, if you want to check out any more of the box, or get any of the pack, well, get this box, or sign up to get any more. They're not endorsing us, but they should.
Right. Right. So this week in hip-hop comic covers for Marvel, the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 1 came out with a tribute to the cover to Tyler, the Creator album. I'm not familiar with this album because I'm old.
I should both say because old.
Yes, yeah. Because old. Angela, Queen of Hell, number 1, came out with a tribute to, is it Nicki Minaj cover? That's my understanding. It's a Nicki Minaj Apple album cover, but again, old.
Sure, we'll go with that.
And something that's a little bit more in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Cover to Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1, tribute to the main Gravediggers album. This is pretty cool. I like this cover. This is really good stuff. This is by Wilfred Santiago, and I will be hunting down Wilfred Santiago, hopefully at the next big Comic-Con I go to, and he'll have this in a print. Or at the very least, I'll have him sign this, because this is a pretty good cover.
I like it.
Sweet.
All right.
Well, so now what you guys read this week?
Let's see. Oh, yeah, I did read Superman 45 this week. I reviewed it. How did I forget that?
Because you reviewed it, like, days ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I read it. What, Tuesday night?
Oh, I read that Justice League Dark Side War Batman number 1. That was weird.
I thought it was kind of interesting.
Let's get into it.
Did you read it, Roddy?
No.
I do my dirt.
Oh, yeah.
Hold the issue up. So, I guess, is it each week maybe a different Justice League side issue will come out focusing on a member of the Justice League that's got the power of a god? So this week we have Batman in the Mobius chair. He's going around stopping crime in Gotham before it starts.
Yeah, that's constitutional.
Yeah.
You know, and also that's very Minority Report.
Yeah.
Got Thanos. So let me ask you this question. Is this their Black Vortex? Is this DC's Black Vortex?
I guess it could be compared to
that. I hadn't thought of it like that. That's a good comparison.
We'll have to see who's left changed at the end of this.
That's an excellent, Roddy, that's an excellent comparison.
Because every time I've heard y'all say about this, I mean, talk about this, it's like, that just sounds familiar.
So this is written by Peter J. Tomasi, who is the writer of Robinson of Batman, right?
I believe so.
And the artist, right? I always get that confused. One guy's doing the art and the writing and...
What, of Robin, Son of Batman?
Yeah, like the team that used to do Batman and Robin, whoever was the artist on... Patrick Gleason, I think, is who I'm thinking about, who is doing the art and writing for Robin, Son of Batman. And Tomasi, I think, is doing Detective Comics now. Either way, he's been in the Bat family for a while.
Okay. Well, you know what I wanted to say real quick? We'll finish talking about the story, and then we'll get to the art. But, the story basically involves, Batman kind of acquiring the one bit of superpower he probably always wanted, which is to know everything. And, it's what complements him the best. And he basically not necessarily wants to create a utopia, but basically is, trying to clean up the streets of Gotham as best he can. But what happens in this story is that he sort of falls prey to the temptations of the power. And, we see a little bit of un-Batman-like behavior that may very well be influenced by the side effects of using the Mobius chair. We have a couple scenes where Alfred is trying to get him to, withdraw from using the Mobius chair. And we find out that, mild spoiler alert, I'll ring the bell. Batman can't get out of the chair.
He tries.
He tries his darndest, but he can't do it. So we end the story with something that I guess with this power you would kind of presume Batman would eventually get to. And, it's kind of predictable. You kind of knew it was coming, but at the same time, I thought the story was pretty well paced. And the art really lends itself to the book. It's very reminiscent of... some of the current DC, it's almost like a DC house style that Jim Lee's kind of put in, and Jason Fabok is kind of carried forward, because this definitely resembles more of Fabok's line work than Jim Lee, but it's definitely Jim Lee influenced.
And there's a good chunk of story focused on Batman confronting Joe Chill.
Yes. Well, that's what I mean by, the untoward, behavior. That's Batman sort of acting very un-Batman-y.
Right. And then the tease at the last page or two, which I assume will get picked up on somewhere else.
It says, to be continued in Justice League number 46.
Yeah. Dun-dun-dun.
All right, fine. I mean, it was okay. It's, it didn't strike me as very Batman-y. But obviously, that's the effect of the Mobius chair.
Yep.
Matt Wang is tweeting at us and saying, "Isn't it weird that Batman travels to the past?" Well, my understanding is that that's one of the powers that Metron always had with the aid of the Mobius chair. Like I said, this is sort of right up Batman's wheelhouse in terms of what the powers that he would have always wanted. So it's not surprising that he would go back and kind of revisit that one point in the past that he probably wishes never happened. But obviously, we wouldn't have a Batman if it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
No big surprise there.
But fun issue.
Sounds like you liked it more than I did.
Yeah,
I definitely appreciated the art.
Yeah, I did too. The artist gave him credit, Fernando Pazarin.
It's a name I hadn't heard yet.
Yeah, but then his art kind of looks, like you said, looks like every other DC artist.
Yeah, it definitely carries part of a house style.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. So you want to talk about Superman, since we're in DC still?
Yeah. So I did review Superman for PopCultureNetwork.com and TheClipNation.com.
Yay! Ching-dang.
Where is it? Over here. Injustice... part something.
Whatever part it is.
Is it Sam the cover or the credits in the back? Probably, maybe. But we have new, I'm assuming, ongoing artists. Howard Porter from Justice League 3000 and 2001 fame.
His style has definitely evolved from what it was back in the Justice League JLA days.
Yeah, I can't speak for what his art was back then, but I'm enjoying the style now. Some people maybe not be too crazy about it, but I am a fan. And it's Superman still trying to get down to the bottom of what's going on with Porter Root. He takes a trip over to Oakland, California, for some reason. I forget why. Oh, that's where some corporate office is located. Yeah. I guess it has ties to Hordor Root.
That's an awful villain name, I swear to God.
That and the villain is just underwhelming as well. I made a
Hordor Root. Seriously? We're supposed to be intimidated by this?
Yeah, in the review, I wasn't too crazy about the villain at all. I do the prospect of Superman Street Fighter was kind of compelling.
Fight Club.
Yeah, this like Fight Club for deities, mythological deities,
right. Right. So what's funny about this? There's a few kind of well-worn tropes that come from that I've actually seen in Thor comics, really, where, you know, I think they might have even touched on it during the one of the Jason Aaron runs of before Odinson lost the hammer, where if you recall, like during whatchamacallit, the God Slayer, what was that guy's name, the character's name, do you remember that, with the
what?
The Thor story, where basically this kind of...
Oh, Gore?
Yes, Gore. So
was it Gore? That doesn't sound right either.
I don't know. It's been a while.
I'm going to Google that while you continue.
Right, but the point is, don't you remember one of the facets of that story being what happens to gods when people stop believing?
Yeah.
Right? So we have a variation of that story here in this book, where basically Superman is looking to investigate Hoarder Root, this awful, awful villain, and stumbles upon a deity that's being used by Hoarder Root as an enforcer. And in the midst of trying to figure out who this enforcer was, Superman again stumbles on something going on in, was it Oakland? He stumbles on a Fight Club / pro wrestling match that's being staged between apparently very ancient deities who are from, you know, very archaic or ancient religions and have very few adherents at this point, so they're only kept alive by the very few that still, you know the stories. So they basically stage these, you know, without spoiling too much, they basically stage these matches to help retell the myths and to keep these deities from fading away into oblivion. You know, it's kind of a weird, yeah. It's kind of a weird turn of events, in my opinion, going from Hoarder Root to you know, mythological deities who need believers to stay alive.
Yeah, this story needed something spicy like this to pick it up because it had gotten kind of stale.
Well, I'm glad you liked this, you know, because it's definitely I felt like it was a pro wrestling shout out, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I figured you'd like this. I just wasn't I wasn't so keen on the quick. Kind of pivot in that direction after going after Hoarder Root and then kind of discovering this, you know, mythological Fight Club by accident, just, you know, stumbling on it.
I don't mind it, just because it needed something
other than Hoarder Root and these awful computer-based people, you know, as the Superman villain.
Okay. Do we want to stay with DC?
I think those are the two books I read. What else is it? I skimmed Batman, Robin, Son of Batman. I can't really speak about it.
I read Batman and Robin Eternal #4.
How was that?
It was cool. The, I guess, semi-spoiler alert, the We Are Robin crew makes an appearance here.
Okay.
Going into fun. Batgirl even makes an appearance, I see. I would have forgotten that if I hadn't started flipping through it just now. Let's see, Cassandra Cain and Bluebird run off together for an adventure, I assume. And perhaps one of the Robins has been taken over by Mother, perhaps, on the last page.
Hello, Mother.
This one was...
Hello, Father.
This was a Steve Orlando script with Scott Eden on pencils. Just to tell, let people know which of the committee did their part in this story. Oh, and before the last book I read from DC, I probably should have taken out the plastic so it doesn't reflect too much light, but We Are Robin #5.
Okay.
It's a cool issue just because after a little side issue last week, it kind of picks back up with the entire group. They're still reeling from the death in the two issues ago. The Nest, a.k.a. Alfred, sort of reaches back out to them and lets them know that he's still dedicated to helping them and drives this nice pickup truck full of merchandise or weapons to them.
Okay.
Them out. We learn about one of the Robins, how her little messed up family dynamic where her brother has no problem beating the crap out of her and trying to kill her and whatnot. Oh, and I'm assuming this is one of the beginnings of the tease for the Robin War, because we have some Court of Owls people show up here.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm enjoying We Are Robin. Still say it has the best covers in the business.
Who's doing them?
The writer does them. Lee Bermejo.
Oh, Lee Bermejo. He's really good.
I need to go and see if I can get every issue just so I have them, just because the covers are so nice.
He is good. You know what I tried to skim this week from DC? Have you guys been reading Cyborg?
Yes. I did read that.
You read that this week?
Yeah.
So what do you think of it? Because I found it hard to kind of slog through it.
Here's the monster variant. That was the other one, Monster Head. It was all right. I mean, we find out in this issue that basically get the backstory on at least.
You're auto tuning, Robert.
Oh, jeez. How about that?
They're going. Again.
They're going.
Yep. Yeah. Auto tune.
Oh, for freak's sake. Yeah, I don't know what to do. I might have to deal with it for right now.
All
right. Anyway, so we basically find out that, this is going to bother me. We find out that Sarah Charles, who is a member of the cast already, a alternate reality version has come back because apparently Cyborg's dad in her time is pretty much the cause of what's going on and why they're getting attacked in a sense. Because basically his dad found some tech that he didn't know too much about, but he did some experimental with it. He and his wife got into an accident and he tried to save her, Mr. Freestyle. But everything he did wasn't working, so he turned himself into, if it looks the way it looks, he turned himself into a cyborg, but still kept going with it, but he went too far, and I guess the tech people either, the tech either went sentient, or there were people trying to find the tech who the original owners or whatnot, so he basically brought upon the killing of that Earth, or the shenanigans that's going on that Earth, and then this alternate Cheryl Charles has been the one fighting resistance in that Earth, and they've been going to reality trying to find people with the same tech, which ends up finding Cyborg, who they end up killing and causing his reboot. And so yeah, it's still interesting and slightly weird story, but it's kind of it still kind of seems like we're gonna get from here to there and then keep going, you know?
Okay.
Once we get past this part. And this is like the first book I read, so you and I think I read this like yesterday or something. So it's like,
okay. I'm Roddy.
Some things. What's that?
Right. Roddy, go ahead. Go ahead and say all we do is win, 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 no matter what.
Oh, no.
While Roddy tries to figure out what's causing his T-painting to keep on keeping on, let's move over to Marvel.
Oh, you know what? I have one more DC.
Oh, you got more DC?
Yeah.
What's that?
Batgirl 45.
Okay.
Which is, I guess, was promoted as the wedding issue between Batgirl's best friend and her girlfriend.
Okay.
Which has an appearance by Grayson, who shows up to sort of like confess his love for Barbara.
Okay.
Because in the New 52, they were never a couple. They just had like sexual tension and, you know, flirty moments together. Oh. But of course, she's at the wedding with her date, Luke Fotts.
You mean the former Batwing or still Batwing?
I guess it's former right now, which, you know, could always change.
Right.
But Grayson and Batgirl go off kind of frolicking on rooftops because she has the wedding ring and he steals it from her, and so she has to chase after him to get it. They kind of reminisce on old times. He tries to make a move on her, but she stops him and says, like, you know, no, you can't just be dead 1 minute and now be back and all of a sudden want to shove yourself into my life, and I'm with the guy now. And he sort of accepts it and moves on. So it looks like Luke Fotts and Barbara Gordon is a thing now. And then there's like a little tease at the end for something I'm not sure about. I guess they're kind of ramping up for the big 50th issue coming up in 5 months, which also corresponds with, I think, like her 50th anniversary. So they supposedly have some big things planned for Batgirl going into next year. So stay tuned for that. And just a very pretty issue. Like, the colors are nice and vibrant. The Babs Tarr's art matches the vibrant tones of the colors. And I keep going back and forth enough. I want to add Batgirl and Gotham Academy to my pull list just because I just love the art on them.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps to have a nicely drawn book to flip through.
Agreed, agreed. I'm definitely a fan of Gotham Academy. I still have not given Batgirl a shot. I probably should at some point.
So now I'm done with DC.
All right. Well, you've read a lot of DC this week.
That's almost all I read.
Well, that's a good change of pace. It's a good change of pace. So I'm going to – did you read any Marvel?
Just one.
Oh, let's talk about that. We did both read it. Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 2.
As did I.
So it's continuing the story of this one mission of Sam Wilson's where he's fighting the Serpent Society on the Mexico border. S.H.I.E.L.D. and Steve Rogers show up and there's a confrontation. We find out why they're
at odds.
Yeah, at odds. It all kind of makes sense. It's kind of Nick Spencer's making sure to include real world scenarios in his story, but not having it like overpower the story. It's making it poignant, but still entertaining. I like sort of like the flashing back and forth from this is what happened in the past. And so even though this is like the 8-month jump and, you know, being dropped in the middle of the story, he's still taking time out to go back and let readers know what's happened previously, which I appreciate. And, yeah.
This is something I've noticed. Well, at least like that got brought to me reading an article or something about this issue and last issue. Like, if you notice in some of the panels, excuse me, of some of the sound effects that happen, like they try to put out, like there's the one part that's when Sam's talking to the dude who's in the elevator right before he sees Misty, and he gets plunked in the head with something. And
who gets plunked in the head?
Sam.
Oh, on the plane?
Yeah, and you see the little sound effect that goes along with it. I thought that was interesting because I noticed that last issue when he was fighting the Serpent Society, and you see the hits that happen, and then you just see the what looks like will be the sound effect, but it's a particular word.
Mm-hmm.
So of some resonance, and I'm sitting here like, that's an interesting touch. I'm kind of digging it, but I've only had a chance to like skim through this book, or this issue rather, but it was reading pretty good from what I read so far. So.
Yeah,
I was pleasantly surprised by this book. It definitely does reestablish some of the storylines that had been kind of so rudely interrupted by Secret Wars in the previous volume of Captain America. You know, there's an appearance in this issue by Armadillo. They pick up on some of the story that had been established in the previous volume. What I liked about this, and I think I would have enjoyed the first issue more as like a double-sized intro issue if the previous issue and this issue were combined. I think I would have appreciated it a lot more. There was a lot of explaining and wrapping things up together, not in a bow, but kind of putting and connecting a lot of the dots in this issue that had been started in the previous issue. And I think this issue does a very good job of establishing the status quo of bringing us to a certain point where we're comfortable with where Sam Wilson is as Captain America now. We know what his status quo is in America as kind of a very much an independent superhero, not beholden to any government agency or to any one person. And, you know, he has a mission that he's sort of establishing for himself. And, you know, that's where we find him at the end of the second issue. Maybe it's a lot to ask to have like a double-sized issue kick off a series. Obviously, they want you to buy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on and so forth. So they want to tease you along. So I guess what I ultimately think is that this is a great wrap up to an like kind of a short opening arc, like a 2-issue arc to establish the status quo of the character and get us moving in the direction that Spencer wants to go. So I give him a lot of credit for, you know, kind of wrapping this up. This could have been like a 3 or 4 issue, setup, but, you know, we're kind of there now. You know, we are where, you know, we've reached this point where Sam Wilson is, you know, doing his thing. Obviously, there is a greater story going on, but we find out how we get to his status quo in 2 issues, and we're off from that point, and I like that.
Yeah, there was a couple other things that I thought was kind of interesting. Like, well, I guess we will see this in another book we talk about, but the incursion stuff is actually still known about from Secret War. So I figured you would think they would have found somewhere. It's like, no, everything's back to where it was. The world is back, but, you know, hey, nobody knew about this part because it was whatever. But apparently, you know, based on the first few pages of the book, we found out that, hey, that stuff was still in play. And we also found out that Reverend's strong enough to hold up a dude, so it's weird.
Right. I was just going to say that I think that, with the introduction of these all different books, what we're finding out is that there were repercussions to the incursion that people know about and remember, people dying and whatnot, or, I guess at the incursion point.
Right.
But we don't know exactly how they're incorporating that into the greater universe until we see the conclusion of Secret Wars.
Right. Which is why I made my little comment in the notes. I was like, well, it's a good thing Secret Wars is over because we know how all this plays out.
Right. This is, for me, this is a definite candidate for Click of the Week because I definitely did enjoy reading this. Like I said, it definitely connected a lot of the dots that were left out there by issue number one, and I like the fact that Spencer only took two issues to tell us a story of how we get to this point, and it's not dragged out.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other Marvel?
Would you read this week, Roddy?
Well, since we're talking about it, New Avengers number 2.
I was about to say, kind of speaking of a story that kind of brings us to a point where we understand the characters to be. This is a story that is to be continued.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I was talking about earlier when I said, I appreciate Spencer kind of wrapping things up in a short two-issue arc to get us to where we need to be. This is kind of the new Marvel way of telling an opening arc where it's just one story after another, and the next issue says to be continued.
Right. So what we have in this book was after the introduction of the team last issue, we found out that Haymaker from the Ultimate Universe is around in our universe, and what we're seeing here is him trying to do his usual, hey, I gotta experiment, I gotta do things. So,
right. So spoiler alert. For anyone not acquainted with the Ultimate Marvel Universe, the Maker is... What if Reed Richards went wrong?
Which is a direct quote from this issue. Yes.
Exactly. So, the opening sequence in this is actually really, really interesting. It focuses on evil Reed Richards and, how he's kind of basically the big bad of the first arc of New Avengers and, how we get to these... life minus creatures that pop up at the end of the first issue. What we have is, there's a lot of mysticism involved in this as well. There's, Wiccan is a member of the new Avengers, having graduated, I guess, presumably from the Young Avengers. So there's definitely some magic involved here and magic involved with these life minus creators, characters with the gems for heads.
Yeah, imagine the Sims, except for minus the heads part.
Right. So isn't it interesting that evil Reed Richards is very much accepting of magic?
Yeah, but you got to think, and he hasn't really said it here, but you got to think he's still thinking scientifically about it, because that's what those types do.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you figure it's like, well, sure, this thing is around, but there's a scientific explanation for it, and judging by what's going on in this book, he didn't expressly say one way or the other, nor did he, before it was like, hey, well, this is a thing that happened, and something that he did, and I think that was the bigger issue. It was like, well, he brought forth this, he pretty much... He called Cthulhu. Let's just go ahead and put that out there.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a character that I'm not entirely familiar with. And they're sitting there talking, and he's like, well, he did it just to do it, just to see if he could. But he's also doing it because he wants to see... He basically, as he said himself, he wants to try to... he knows that things have changed, and he knows that there was things before this, and he's trying to dig up said things that came before this. So it's going to be interesting to see what... if it goes too much farther, what he pulls out and what he brings forth, because right. This Cthulhu's character apparently is still around, even though he himself, the Maker, doesn't think so.
But, isn't it interesting that evil Reed Richards is a version of Dr. Doom?
Yeah, pretty much. Which, you got to think that at various times that has been kind of said in Fantastic Four.
Right.
So, they're just pretty much parts of each other. And I think there was, I'm thinking back to that one miniseries that they had that kind of played that up just a little bit, and Lisa win one of Franklin's dreams. But that's
sure, you know, there.
But yes, I'm interested to see if the Maker is going to be a long running. You know, clearly he's here, but if he's going to be,
I think he's got a lot of potential as a big time villain in the Marvel universe. You know, he's got a slightly different backstory than the Doctor Doom story that we're all very familiar with, and obviously they're going in a very different direction with Doom right now in the pages of Iron Man, so, or at least Invincible Iron Man, because I forget what the title of the second Iron Man book. I can't believe they're making a second Iron Man book again.
Oh, International Iron Man.
Yes, International Iron Man. We have domestic Iron Man and international.
I can see the point of a second title just because that's what Bendis does, has to have sister titles, but him, just the point of him being like some, this being the book that he does like international stuff in, is kind of flimsy to me.
Yes, very lame.
Yeah, which also
I may not be picking that book up, to be perfectly honest. That's pretty lame.
Yeah, which kind of makes me think about, like, I wonder if there's going to be any run-ins with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Kind of doing the same thing.
It's possible.
So, but back to New Avengers. The other part of this book that I'm actually starting to dig the book a lot, or a good bit, because the other side of the token, you see the how the team is going to presumably operate. You know, we have the field team with Songbird and White Tiger, Squirrel Girl, and all those. You start to see them start to mesh a little bit, but you also see the behind the scenes with Roberto and the AIM team that, you know, that he has so graciously bought and using to his example. Because you see that one part in the book where they go up against the villain and the villain kind of makes a stab, and then now they have to come up with a plan to try to deal with them, but they don't do it. But because the team is made up of, you know, I'm not going to say relatively newcomer, but say a younger team in general, one, and a younger lead for the team, which assumably, well, I guess Stonebird is the field lead, and then Bobby is behind the scenes dude overall. So since I guess he's doing calling the shots, and they get to a point in the book where it's like, okay, team's up against the wall. We need some answers. We need some done. So he calls forth to the, you know, to Shield. I mean, not Shield, to the AIM contingent to come up with an idea, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, because, you know, if you look at the roster of the New Avengers, you have Sunspot, Songbird, Hawkeye, Wiccan, Squirrel Girl, Hulkling, Power Man, White Tiger, and Pod.
Mm-hmm.
Not a super genius to be found. No master planner, no big time thinker on this entire squad, right? Mm-hmm. So it would fall upon the backup of the operations team, yeah, back at headquarters to come up with a plan or to come up with any sort of scientific or technical solutions to a problem. I thought that was pretty good that they're using AIM for good.
Right, and the way they come across the way to deal with the enemy in this one was pretty good, and like the I don't know if it's going to be continue to go forth like this, or it's just going to be like, all right, well, we got this in place, you get that, so just go ahead and start having some plans in place. We don't know, but it's kind of fun in the way that kind of comes across, and even when Bobby's having that moment of unsureness before he gets to asking people what to do, you know, what the deal is.
Right.
I was going to say, Roberto doesn't need any, like, scientific members of the team because he has enough of those in his AIM people.
He's got a whole level of team, science team behind him. So
yeah, it's a pretty interesting team dynamic, and I was pleasantly, this is another book that pleasantly surprised me off of, I wasn't so keen on the first issue, but this issue really kind of sold me on the concept.
Yeah, so we will see how that goes, how that plays out going forward. But for right now, it's still pretty fun. I'm digging it.
Tim, did you read the first issue? Tim.
Muted.
Oh, he's muted.
The first issue, I did read the first issue. I'm an Al Ewan fan, so.
Right. Yeah. Make sure you read this issue because I think you'll agree with us that this was a surprisingly, you know, it's a surprisingly strong follow-up. And it does set up a good team dynamic. So, you know, and an interesting, you know, dynamic between the two branches of AIM, Avengers Idea Mechanics, the field team and the scientific team at home.
Right. And yeah, this still has bringing up the Al Ewan part. This still has that feel of his previous books, the Mighty Avengers books. But
right.
But there was a little difference to it that I haven't really put. Like he's doing something slightly different with it. You know, it could be in the makeup of the whole thing or whatnot. But you can still feel that it's, you know, that it's his writing, and it's still pretty fun.
Gotcha. So, all right. Let's see what else.
Let's go on to, what's that?
Hold on, I'm just checking your list now.
Yeah, I only have a couple others because we already talked about Cyborg. So we got a Star Wars.
Ubaka the Cookie.
Yep. So This is just a click away from me. Chewbacca number two. Matter of fact, let me just... There's the cover right there.
Nice.
And real quick aside, it is really weird picking up physical books because having not done so in quite a while, you realize it's like, wait, what are all these ads doing here?
Yeah.
And you just flipping through the book, reading through the book. It's like, oh, yeah, books used to have ads. I remember that. But anyway, Chewbacca number two. Here we have Chewbacca and this young lady in his that he has befriended on some planet that I can't remember right about now.
It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, not really, because they probably won't be here that long. But the plan has been put in action for Chewbacca to help this young lady free the people who have been enslaved by this dude who just sold this mining operation that was using these people to the Empire. Mm-hmm. So the plan was put into place to where the young girl's going to go back into the mine, get recaptured, basically. And Chewbacca, funnily enough, has to, for his part, dig down into the mine after she gets to a certain point and find a good place for him to come down into, which Chewbacca has this thing with in tight spaces, which comes up early on, and he's like, not doing this. And finally relents, you know.
Yeah, that was pretty amusing, and yeah. That's definitely all, the storytelling is all Noto in that sequence, because there's obviously not a lot of, there's no thought bubbles or anything like that. It's just grunting and Chewbacca howling, and you know, the panels and the art tell the story of Chewbacca's history of you know, being captured by the slavers and, you know, basically being imprisoned by the you know, by the Imperials before he meets Han Solo, and you know, that was pretty interesting. Noto's art in this is, you know, I give him so much credit for, you know, kind of finding this style. You know, he's doing this all digitally, for finding the style where he can churn this stuff out on a timely basis and still have it look so good. And it's still so Noto, too. It's his style, you know. It's remarkable that, you know, he still draws a very recognizable Chewbacca. It's stylistic, but it's still fairly accurate in terms of the depiction and the impression that you get from, you know, from looking at it. So, you know, I give Noto a ton of credit. He makes this book very readable for me. You know, where Duggan is going with this, I'm not sure, but, you know, right now I'm having a good time finding out.
Yeah, I think, well, being that this is, if I'm not mistaken, this is a miniseries, it probably won't go too much farther, like, unless it just goes into whatever mission that Chewbacca goes into after this, and the girl's going to come with him, who knows.
It's a limited series.
Right. It is a limited series, right.
Yeah, so being that the case, you know, we'll probably just get him, and then he'll be on his merry way, or it'll lead into something that may reverberate later on, who knows. But the one thing I would love to have this page right here.
As a print,
yeah. Like, I really love it. Like, it's one big solid page.
Yeah. I was about to say, it's a shame that this is all digital, because that would be a heck of an original art page to try to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I love the way Noto's really, like, rendering Chewbacca in this. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. And then later on in the book, I kind of love, like, well, now they're down into the thick of things, and they're in this mind where they can't really shoot, because, you know, as soon as Chewbacca comes down to help, you know, he's been told that he can't use his bowcaster because, you know, the larva down there is volatile. So we get to see a little bit of Chewbacca's ingenuity, because he kind of retrofits this little droid that happens to come along or something. But the funniest thing about that is, as they're going along, somebody comes and is like, hey, you know, you bring a droid to a blaster fight, and then Chewbacca just picks it up and thumps him with it. And as a matter of fact, even when, or like early on when Chewbacca comes in, you see the page where the girl's just reacting to what, you know, Chewbacca's just throwing people around.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just reacting, and it's like, ooh, that's, you know, and all this and all that. All of that is just so great.
Yeah, no, it's definitely very well done. I like what they're doing with this. Let's see, what else?
Yeah, I'm going to get this put out of the way while we're at it, and then that'll do it up for me.
Oh, you want to get the Kanan book out of the way?
Yep.
Okay.
Kanan, the last one I did that with digitally. So Kanan, the last battle on number 7. Even after the end of last issue, where he gets stabbed in the back, we find him in a back of the tank, being found by the rest of the Rebel crew. And in this instance, he goes into another flashback to when he was a Padawan. And in this flashback, we get to see him meet his master, Deva, I can't remember her last name, sorry. But we get to see how he met his master, who ends up later on getting murdered through Order 66. But, you know, we find him, Caleb, in his, right after his initiate trial, and then, like I said, coming across Master Deva, who was apparently out in the field, but her squad got dealt with, and apparently she went up against Grievous and was severely hurt, and the rest of her squad kind of had a bunch of casualties. So we find this as she gets out of the back of the tank and going through her, rehabilitation, for lack of a better word, because, you know, Yoda and Mace Windu is kind of concerned about her mental well-being, and she's all saying she's fine, and then there's word going around the temple about, you know, how she's damaged and this and that other, which seems to intrigue young Caleb, or Kanan. And then you see them meet, and then something starts happening at the end of the book where apparently somebody's invading into the temple or something's going on, because there's an explosion and some almost familiar thermite detonators, whatnot, or bombs that just get randomly placed, they go off, and that's where the end of the books end. So this is probably there's going to be a continuation after that. The book's still pretty cool. You know, you could see the background of a character that you really don't know much about, but you probably still have to be a fan of Star Wars Rebels in the first place to know who this person is in the first place, because as far as we know, it's not going to come up anywhere else.
Later on, maybe.
Maybe. Or, I doubt there will be any Force Awakens tie. Right. But who knows what will. Right. But other than that, this was a good read.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we're probably in rapid fire mode. I think we've covered most of what Tim has read. I think we've covered most of what you've read. So I'm just going to do rapid fire a couple of Marvel all new, all different books that I read this week. The first is another sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. It's Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number one. And this involves a S.H.I.E.L.D. team of not quite classic Marvel monsters, although there's definitely an element of that in this. We do have Agent Dum Dum Dugan, who is who we found out recently has not been alive for quite a while, but has been has had his consciousness occupy a very sophisticated life model decoy at the behest of Nick Fury Sr. And you know, this it's the Dum Dum Dugan LMD that's been chosen to lead this team of Marvel monsters on various missions. The team is made up of some really interesting characters, some of them very new, some of them very old in terms of their history in the Marvel Universe, but you'll recognize very many of them. There's a lot of just really cool things that happen in this issue. You know, lots of funny lines. Shout out to Frank Barbieri, former guest of the show, who is writing this book. It's you know, there's a lot of great lines in this, funny quips. Brent Schoonover is on art, and it's very, very attractive. The book is very well drawn and laid out, because it's, you know, it's very easy to follow. You know, there's a couple of scenes where you know, there's a funny scene where something bad happens with Jasper Sitwell, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., who's now become a member of The Walking Dead. He's a zombie. And for whatever reason, they make the mistake of giving him what appears to be an RPG. And something very funny happens when Jasper Sitwell, the zombie, has an RPG. So, you know, there's a couple of really cool bits in this. You know, I honestly was very surprised at how much I enjoyed this. It's a definite credit to Frank Barbieri, who wrote the book. It's a credit to him that I enjoyed this so much. It's almost like a Marvel version of Ghostbusters, you know, like a supernatural team taking on supernatural opponents. You know, you would anticipate at some point that Doctor Strange might make a guest appearance in the book. We'll see. I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to stay on the book, but this was a fun first issue. I did get the hip-hop cover, so I did get a copy of the number one. And I may very well pick up the number two to see how this goes before I figure out whether or not I want to drop it.
Glad you liked it.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Also, surprising book, and maybe not a candidate for Click of the Week, but definitely a surprise in the sense that I enjoyed reading it, which was, and what I'm speaking of is Spider-Man 2099 number 2.
And, you know, this is a very interesting issue to read, because what we find out, without spoiling too much, what we find out is that the first issue, the events of the first issue have very big ramifications on Miguel O'Hara.
Does your iPad app make a noise when you scroll?
Maybe that's just my finger.
No, it's not.
We hear something scratching or something. Yeah, it looks like it happens only when you're flipping with your thumb.
Oh, yeah, that might be me very forcefully tapping. Hmm. What do you hear?
No, necessarily hear it now. But
how about this?
No.
Oh, that's so weird. It was probably just me very forcefully tapping.
Yeah. It's something with your hands or something.
It seemed like it was a combination of the two. We don't know. But regardless of this.
Yeah. Listen, we have T-Pain on one end. Exactly. We have T-Pain on one end and me very forcefully tapping on my tablet on another. In any event, this issue of Spider-Man 2099, I know that we haven't been the biggest fans of Will Sliney's art. Tim, give it another shot, because this issue, you know, for whatever reason, I think it's a color art that's really complementing his style. Frank D'Armata and Andres Mosa are the color artists on this, and I think what they're doing is very much complementing Will Sliney's art. The lines are very, very clean. I think they complement what he does very well, as opposed to what we saw in Fearless Defenders. So give it a shot. It's a, yeah. You know, without going too much into the story, this was it sets up a nice status quo for Miguel O'Hara right now.
Yeah, Doug liked it, the first issue, so maybe I have to think about it.
Yeah, and we also have the introduction of the suit that we saw featured in the hip-hop cover.
Oh, okay.
The red and the white suit. And what I like about that is it incorporates the look of the original suit, but makes him very, very distinct from any Spider-Man costume you've seen before.
I do like the new costume.
I like the new costume as
well. So is this in the present or the past?
I believe this is in the present.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain this is in the present because he's interacting with Peter Parker in the story. Because if I recall correctly, he goes to the future and finds out that nothing's changed in the last issue, and then hops back, and then that's when some of the tragic events of the first issue take place. And that's where we find ourselves at the beginning of this issue.
Gotcha.
He's a future president.
Yeah.
Cool. We got anything else?
No, that's it for me. That's it for me. I think it's time for Clicks of the Week. Oh, you want to do an ad real quick before we do it?
Yes, yeah. Thanks for the reminder. Pull it back up. Let's see. This episode of Comic Chronicles is also sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Charging, Using Blanca's Power for Good, Street Fighter 2, Jarvis is My Co-Pilot, Avengers Age of Ultron, Nelson and Murdoch, Avocados at Law, Daredevil, A Tragic Comic Hero's Ending, Aquaman in a Sardine Can, Aquaman, Central City, Running Club, The Flash, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today. Clicks of the Week, sponsored by Busted Tees.
That's right. We should do that from now on.
Yeah, actually, we should.
I mean, no.
Something to remember for next time.
Yep.
We'll work that one. So, what we got? I think we're at No Tim's.
Mine is the one Marvel book I read, Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 2.
And you know what? Surprisingly, I'm going to second that as my click of the week as well.
Yeah.
Then I guess that is up to me now. Actually, this wasn't that hard of a choice. I'm going to say Chewbacca number 2.
Nice.
I really enjoyed reading that book.
Believe it or not, Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 came in very close for me. I recommend you guys at least give that a read.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anything you guys looking forward to reading that you hadn't?
Chewbacca, that new Avengers 2, Grayson.
Yeah.
That's it. Let's see.
There's a decent amount of stuff out this week.
Yeah. Which I will say that New Avengers was a relatively close second.
But. Yeah.
And
I would agree with that, Roddy. I would agree with that, Roddy. That New Avengers number 2 came in very close as well.
Yeah. I think I want to try out, I think I said this before we started, that Art Ops book and what was the other, Black Magic? I'm going to peruse those.
Some good buzz for Black Magic.
Yeah, apparently. So I want to check that out. Who knows what will come up with that.
Find it for yourself, huh?
Exactly.
Alrighty, I guess that does it for tonight's episode of Comic Chronicles.
Yay!
There may not be an episode next week because
we shall see.
We'll be busy, and Roddy Cat will be back on the 9 to 5 or
secret missions. Yeah,
whatever hours they actually end up being. So we will keep you posted, of course.
Yes,
keeping everyone out there in Comic Book Chronicles land safe. Just know that.
That's right.
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Doug is at PCN_dirt on Twitter. And go to his website, PopCultureNetwork.com.
The reason why I'm wielding Mjolnir tonight is because the Mets are down 0-2. Guess who is pitching game 3? It's 4 to the rescue, Noah Syndergaard. And if anyone is watching the TBS coverage of Major League Baseball playoffs, the National League Championship Series, Pedro Martinez, ex-Met and ex-Red Sox pitcher, was doing a commentary in the post game, and he basically did, he's a fan of Syndergaard, and he was waving around Mjolnir on set, and he definitely tweeted out, or someone tweeted out a video of him saying, "Thor to the rescue!" So that was it was pretty cool. So Thor is going to deliver, and we'll be right back in it. So let's go Mets.
Indeed. So go to the website theclicknation.com, and and I did say this in the plus earlier, but make sure to give us 5-star reviews, give us thumbs up on iTunes and Stitcher, help us move up the podcasting ranks. And we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace. Nice
to hang with you. It's Dr. Doom. What's on your evil mind? I can't stand what's on your mind.